This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Still to come on the program, in about 30 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by the last Winnipeg Jets head coach to lead the team to the playoffs. Back in 1996, that was Terry Simpson. He's going to join us at the top of the next hour. Looking forward to catching up with Terry Simpson.
I always wonder what would have happened if they hadn't traded Solani and they had him for that last run. Don't forget, emotional aspect, just talent-wise. I mean, how would they have played? You know, they took Detroit 6 games.
You're saying Chad Kilgour and Oleg Tavernovsky weren't doing it for you that series?
Kilgour scored in Game 3, but he wasn't any good, really.
Shane Doan was incredible as a rookie in that series, too.
Oh, good.
Didn't Craig Janne score in Game 3 as well?
No.
He
didn't, no.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Okay. I thought he
scored. Kachuk, Manson, Olchuk, and Kilgour scored.
Maybe Janne set Kachuk's goal up.
Yeah, I think that did happen.
Okay. Someone call him Charlie Richie.
That's right. We know. Anyways, we'll talk to Terry Simpson coming up at 10 o'clock. In the next segment, we're actually going to reminisce about some old playoff games, given this is the first time since in almost 20 years that we've had this opportunity again.
Absolutely. And Tim Campbell had a great article in the Free Press this morning about all the old playoff runs of the Jets.
Yeah.
With some interesting stuff to talk about there.
Exactly. So that's coming up in the next couple of minutes. I want to keep looking back at our regular season in review and talk about the defensemen and the goaltending of the Winnipeg Jets. And I mean, I think the word I would use to describe the sort of both areas is perseverance, in that, you know, the Jets defense was absolutely riddled with injuries at various points in time throughout the course of the season. You know, we know the stretch in, you know, whatever that was, December, January, where I think every defenseman on the roster was out of the lineup for a period of time. And I was talking about this. I was on Dave Jamieson's show on TSN 1260, our affiliate in Edmonton, yesterday. And we were talking about and made mention of the fact that, you know, all the injuries, and they could have, you know, they had the excuses there available if they wanted to take them.
For sure.
And they didn't take them once, even after defenseman after defenseman after defenseman was falling by the wayside. And all they did is, next man up, it's your time to perform. And that's why I think perseverance is the word I would use to describe the Jets defense throughout the course of this regular season.
Yeah, that's a good word, Richie. And I think the defense really came of age, or really had a moment of, if you want to call it, a serendipitous moment in December during those injuries that you're talking about, when Dustin Byfuglien moves back to defense and Ben Sherratt is called up from St. Mm-hmm. John's, and they put those two guys together. Mm-hmm. It seems like those two guys have been playing together for a long time or whatever, even though Buff has been suspended a little bit here and Sherratt's been playing with Tobias. Tyler Myers.
Yeah, and Sherratt was injured too.
And Sherratt was injured. But really, to me, that was significant, because that kind of changed the outlook of the defense. And not to mention the fact that Tyler Myers coming over for Zach Bogosian has changed so much, because now he leads the team in ice time, and he's paired up with Tobias Enstrom, the usual spot of Zach Bogosian. But to me, this group, I think we already knew it was the strength of the team, and now it's even more of a strength. And you got to give credit all the way down the line. Mark Stewart, I think, especially on this road trip here, not that he hasn't been good for the whole year, but he's had an excellent year with Jake Trouba, who's fallen off a little bit. But I think for the most part, they've been healthy and they've been that solid second pair. And then you go down to the third pair, whether that's Jay Harrison and Adam Partey. And we know that Adam Partey, you know, he's been a healthy scratch at times. But when he goes in, whether he plays 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 14 minutes, Paul Maurice has a lot of confidence in him. He can play on the penalty kill. It's a very solid group. I mean, I haven't checked it recently, but, you know, the Jets are 10th or 12th or whatever in the league in goals against, which is a huge improvement.
Tied for Tampa in 10th at 209 goals
against.
That's
not bad. See, that was at the top of my head. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Richie, the difference between last year and this year, And you got to give, obviously, the goaltending and credit. Andrei Pavlik has been much better this year, and Michael Hutchinson has been a better backup than Al Montoya this year, and played more games than Al Montoya played. But this group of defensemen, you know, with the addition of Ben Sherratt and Tyler Myers and the subtraction of Zach Bogosian, but just as a whole, the way they've played, it's been night and day. And this team, and I know you mentioned it, you could say that this group of defensemen the Jets have can really compete against almost any group of defensemen in the league. There aren't that many teams where you'd say this team's defense is significantly better than the Winnipeg Jets. And that's with or without Buff there.
I don't think it should be overly surprising, as in the sense that their money is spent on the back end. and they're paying big money to Enstrom, big money to Bufflin, big money to Myers. All those guys are you know, when you're throwing that much cash on the back end, eventually big money to Trouba, but not right now, and that's where you get some good value. And that's where you hope that the strength of your team is, and I think that's finally, I think, become a strength. I think it was a week they've been spending money on D since they came back, mm-hmm. many of the same players, but now I think it's becoming a real strength of the squad.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point you make. I mean, there's no reason but you know, to your point though, they haven't spending that big money, and you know, why do you think this year it's become a strength as opposed to the previous years when, you know, same amount of money being spent more or less, but you know, not the same results?
It goes back to leadership, Drew, and I'm sure certainly they have more talent on the roster overall. You give them time, but and leadership and the way that they're playing. I mean, you talk all about system, this and that. Palmarese's system is based upon hard work, and the team's playing hard. I mean, he's got his, you know, he bases the system somewhat on the physicality of the group, and I think on the speed of the group, especially the defenseman's skating ability, and you know, that whole playing as a 5-man unit that you hear all the time, and. While cliche,
as opposed to the teams that play as a 3-man unit.
Yeah, exactly. While cliche, I mean, the Jets do play a game that's very much in sync when they're running on all cylinders, and it's based on hard work. And if the system doesn't have hard work, then the system isn't really worth anything. And so that's the biggest thing that Palmarese has got them. And that's the thing about all these teams: Ottawa, Calgary. They're not the most talented groups in the league, and the Jets have more talent than Calgary and Ottawa, in my opinion. But they're executing, and they're just playing. They're playing especially hard, and not every team in the league does do that. So it's that's a communication thing and an ability to get through to the squad. And I think he's done a really nice job of that.
Looking at the goaltending, I mean, it's amazing where all the Pavlik fans coming out of the woodwork like nobody's business over the last 3 weeks to a month.
Catch 22, is it defense and forwards and the group as a whole that's made the team better and the goaltending numbers better? Yeah, part of it for sure. I think the tenders have played pretty well. If you look at the season as a whole, I think you'd say that they played pretty well. I don't think you're completely convinced that they're going to be any kind of dominating performance in the playoffs here, but it's nice to see a guy like Andre Pavlik really succeed down the stretch, you know, kind of play well at the beginning, kind of fall off, and then come back and play well. And I like the way Maurice employed the goaltenders. I thought Hutchinson had earned a chance to play a significant amount of games. He didn't succeed, and he goes back to Pavlik. And the Jets are one of many teams doing these two goalies. I mean, St. Louis and Anaheim and Calgary and Vancouver with the injuries there. We can go over all these playoff teams that have so many goaltenders. I think it might cause some controversy in the playoffs, and teams with, you know, Lundqvist and Carey Price, and you know, I didn't mention Detroit also with the goaltending issues. I think some of the teams that have a starting netminder and are secure with that might have an advantage here. But I think, again, I just think Paul Murray's done a real nice job here, and he's managed goaltenders before, usually actually riding one more than not, but whether it be like what Urbe or Vesa-Toskala. But it's nice to see the netminders finally succeeding.
Yeah, and I think, Richie, you have to mention how important it has been to get the goaltending and how that's allowed the Jets to play the way they've played, scoring the first goal, mm-hmm. how good they've been when they do score the first goal and keep games low scoring, especially against their division rivals. But I think, you know, Andre Pavlik really has been the story. Michael Hutchinson was the story earlier on in the season. If you remember, heading into the All-Star break, there was some speculation that Michael Hutchinson might represent the Jets at the All-Star game. That's how well he was playing, right? And he started to struggle, and Andre Pavlik was struggling at the same time. And I think Andre Pavlik this year, guys, really was pushed by Michael Hutchinson, and that ended up helping him. I think, you know, you go back to the first year with Chris Mason, you know, we obviously love Chris Mason, and Al Montoya was an awesome guy too. But these were guys that were bona fide backups. We talk about Mason, he was in you know, mid-30s at that point. But Montoya, too, you know, in his late 20s there, early 30s. Montoya was, he knew that he wasn't going to get the majority of the starts the last couple of years. But with Michael Hutchinson coming up and the way he played for the St. John's Icecaps, he took over that number one job, even though, you know, Paul Maurice was careful about it kind of in December there. When you could see that Michael Hutchinson was pulling away, he kind of kept them on a rotation. But over the last month, Andre Pavlik has been so good, and we haven't really seen him play like this, I think, since maybe the first season the Jets came back. And he's really, you could argue, become, I don't know if you want to say the MVP of the team, but he's become one of the MVPs of the team as far as how they rely on him. I mean, he goes into these buildings, Colorado and St. Louis and Minnesota, and doesn't allow a goal on the road when the season is on the line, to me, that is just incredible. It really is. I think when you look back on it, I mean, not to say that the Jets as a team didn't work hard and get, you know, get the right bounces and goals and all that, but I think, you know, he's playing at an elite level that we haven't seen maybe ever, actually. I know he won the Calder Cup with the Chicago Wolves, but it's been incredible, and I think it's really kind of rippled down to the rest of the team. It's given the team confidence. They know that Andrei Pavlik's going to make the big saves. I think we've seen that time and time again, guys, with teams that, you know, if goaltender's playing a little bit shaky, the rest of the team knows that they can't give up as many shots, and then maybe they have to compensate for that. So the goaltending's been excellent. Again, I give the goaltending an A this year as a group, I think, just because of how solid they've been as a tandem the whole year. When Pavlik was struggling, Hutchinson was there to carry the load. And then when Hutchinson started to struggle, Pavlik came in and was excellent. So Michael Hutchinson, again, I think, you know, talking about today's game, Drew, I think Michael Hutchinson wants to prove that he might not get another start, right?
Sure.
We're expecting Pavlik to get the majority of the starts in the playoffs. So I think Michael Hutchinson wants to end with a good game this afternoon.
And I think he wants to say to the management that if something was to happen, you know, don't worry, I got this, guys. You know, and Connor Hellebuck going to be the backup for Michael Hutchinson today. So he gets his first taste of NHL, at least sitting on the bench action. We'll see if he actually plays in the game or not. But, I think it's important. Not tremendously important, but I think it's important for Michael Hutchinson to get back in the net and get back into the flow of feeling pucks in a real game setting. Quickly, before we go to break, guys, who's your MVP on this Winnipeg Jets team through the regular season?
It's a good question. I think when we did this, I remember we did this back in December. I picked Dustin Byfuglien as the MVP, and you know, I think now that the season has progressed, I'm going to have to go with Blake Wheeler. I mean, Blake Wheeler has gotten so many timely goals. And
the old switcheroo.
I think to me it's Byfuglien and Wheeler, but I think Wheeler gets the edge because Wheeler paces the offense.
Yeah, I had Blake Wheeler in December, Drew, and I'm going to stick with Blake Wheeler. I think that's just the way he's played this whole year with the, I think, especially the move, Ladd Little move to this next line with Scheifele and Stafford has certainly helped ignite those two guys. And he's just been a constant force in the lineup. Skates well, makes his teammates better. Seems to take on even more of a leadership role here. He would be my MVP.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to take a walk down memory lane and look back at Jets playoff games that have happened in the past. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. It's been an absolute madhouse at Royal Sports as people have been heading in there to buy all of their white merchandise.
I walked by the Jets gear store yesterday, and there was a huge lineup. You could see people just, you know, grabbing those white t-shirts that they've released, those whiteout 2015 Stanley Cup playoff shirts. It's unbelievable. It's crazy.
It's just like that at Royal Sports, and they have a huge selection there with hats, t-shirts, jerseys, whatever you want. They'll take care of you right on site. So go to Royal Sports and check them out online at royalsports.me. Two locations to serve you and your Winnipeg Jets needs. Fitting. As we look, take a walk down memory lane, looking back at some of the great Jets playoff games in years past.
Wouldn't it be a jump down memory lane, Drew?
It would be a jump down memory lane, if you will. Great article by Tim Campbell, who's been there for a lot of those games in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Starts back in 1982, and I gotta tell you, I don't have much of a memory of the 1982 Blues-Jets playoff series where the Blues defeated the Jets 3-1 in the first round. But I mean, you got to start back in 96. I mean, we were there, Game Six. You know, the Jets come back. Nikolai Habibulin steals Game Five in Detroit, as most fans didn't think that they were going to be coming back to say goodbye. And then the Game 6 here in Winnipeg, where the Jets get down to that quick 3-0 lead, 3-0 first period lead that Detroit jumps out to. And then Norm McIver gets the Jets one goal in the third period. Jets lose 3-1, and that was the end of it. But, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, April 28th, 1996, and it's, you know, a little less than 20 years later, are going to be back in the playoffs for the first time here in Winnipeg.
It's pretty incredible, and I'm actually really happy that the fact that the Jets are in the playoffs has brought back some mentions of the old Jets, because we haven't really heard much about the old Jets, and for whatever reason, there's not really a ton of attention to the fact that the team was here the first time around, so I'm happy that that's been given the attention, because the reason this city supports hockey is that the teams fell in love with NHL hockey the first time around, and there was the fact that I wasn't here anymore, that desire to get it back, that I think played a huge factor in the confidence of the people who brought it back. So that's great. I mean, think about those games. You know, we were looking at Tim Campbell's article, and Tim covering the team for so long. You know, the Jets lose in 96 to Detroit. Detroit goes to the conference final, loses to Colorado. 93, they lose to Vancouver. 92, they lose to Vancouver. Those are heartbreakers. I don't want to talk about it.
I still remember the Greg Adams goal.
Shouldn't have been a goal. But
It wouldn't be a goal in today's NHL.
Yeah, it wouldn't, yeah. And they only called it a goal because they called off a goal at the end of the third.
That's right.
1990, the Jets lose to Edmonton, and 88 Edmonton, and 87 Edmonton. Edmonton won the Cup all three of those years. 86, they lost to Calgary, went to the Cup final. Calgary did.
Should point out, in 87, the Jets did get into the second round there, beating the Flames 4-2, the only time the Jets have won a playoff series.
No, they also won 85.
Sorry, 85 as well, yes.
And then they lost Edmonton the second round. Edmonton won the Cup that year. Lost Edmonton the first round in 84. Edmonton won the Cup that year. Lost Edmonton in the first round in 83. Edmonton lost to the Islanders in the Cup that year. So, you know, you talk all about all the struggles or the plight of the former Jets. Like, these teams lost to teams that always won the Cup.
Yeah.
Then they were losing to some kind of Cinderella story.
No, they were losing to excellent hockey teams. And
some of the best teams of all time.
Sure.
I mean, those Calgary teams that they were beat in a lot of those series were as good as any those Calgary-Edmonton battles, and the Jets were involved in those battles. That was some top quality hockey.
Well, you mentioned Calgary and Edmonton, and you're right, Richie. Gretzky, basically, in the 1980s, Wayne Gretzky had something for dinner, and it was the Winnipeg Jets. That's what he had for dinner in the playoffs.
What did you have for dinner last night?
I didn't have dinner because I slept through dinner. I came home and I was going to have a late dinner, and so I'm pretty hungry right now, Drew. So, no, but I mean, you talk about those Calgary Flames and Edmonton Oilers teams, Richie, and then you get to the kind of 1992, 93, 93, 94 with Teemu Selanne, and who did they run into? The Vancouver Canucks, right? So if it wasn't the Flames or the Oilers, I find it so ironic that the two teams that helped the Jets get into the playoffs were the Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames by beating the Los Angeles Kings, right? So it's kind of ironic. But, you know, going back to the original Winnipeg Jets and the Winnipeg Arena, I wasn't there that last year when they played the Detroit Red Wings, but for me, the greatest memory maybe ever, and I was there for the 1999 World Junior Tournament when Canada lost to Russia in the final, and remember Roberto Luongo was in net. We can go over some of those players. Maybe Rico Fatta was on that team.
They got absolutely dominated in that final game, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Artem Chubarov, I believe, had that goal.
Yeah.
Wasn't he a Manitoba Moose player as well?
Yeah.
Vancouver, yeah. Finneganov was on that team.
Yeah.
So you go back to 1990 for me, and I went with my dad and my sister in 1990 when the Jets played the Edmonton Oilers in that first round.
Dave Ellett, and double overtime winner.
I was there for that goal. And I remember, like, if you weren't able to be in the Winnipeg Arena, and we all were for a playoff game, it was, like, indescribable. It was a small arena. It was an old arena. You know, it was called the Barn and everything, and it had that great smell of popcorn and
boiled hot dogs.
Yeah, and boiled hot dogs. We'll go with that, Drew. But it was such an amazing atmosphere. There was such an energy, and, you know, the whiteout was obviously incredible. Everybody had the old white pom-poms, but the energy, everybody was just so happy and supportive of the Winnipeg Jets. And I know they ended up losing that series on a Mark Lamb goal, but that goal to me, I remember just that, you know, being a kid, I believe I was 8 years old at the time.
I hope you can add up those years.
Being in
1982 minus 1990.
Yeah. Being in that arena.
You actually would have been 7, right? Because you wouldn't have yet been 8 because you were born in July.
That's a good point. I was 7. So
don't confuse him, Richard.
Yeah, I don't know how to do the math. So, but really, it was just incredible. And you know, I know Richie was there that last year, and they took the Detroit Red Wings to 6 games. And then when they lost, everybody stuck around, and nobody wanted to leave, and everybody was crying and all that. But it's going to be amazing now transitioning to 2015, and the whiteout is coming back, and some people will remember those old days at the Winnipeg Arena. It's just, it's incredible. It's such an exciting time for the city, and even for fans, even for Winnipeggers who aren't hockey fans, it kind of brings out that civic civic pride, and it's great to see for the city.
And who's buying the tickets? The people buying the tickets remember the Jets when they were here. I mean, the people who don't, who aren't, the people, they're too young. You know, it's been 19 years, you say, Drew, and the guys who are 19, 18-year-old kids now, they're not buying the tickets to these games for the most part.
They can't afford it.
But yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. They're a fortune. And the people buying are, like, are the kids who were brought to the games by their dads, like my dad and your dad and everybody's dad, take them to their game. Their moms take them to the game. And now they're the ones buying tickets. And their dads are probably buying tickets as well. So that's really who's you know, bringing this home. And that's why the memories of the whiteout and all that is that's how you and that's the feeling you get, the excitement you get. And, you know, also makes me think about that Dave Alec goal you mentioned, as Don Whitman.
Yeah.
You know, calling that. I think it was John Garrett calling that game.
Yep.
John Garrett just stayed in the, you know, he hasn't actually left. He just continues to call games. It feels like he's calls every game in the past 30 years. But
calls games for the Canucks now,
right,
on a regular basis.
And Don Whitman was a staple in terms of Winnipeg television and CBC, of course, and covering the team. So even, you know, if he's passed away, you think about him and just watching those old games. And that brings back all the memories. And so it's great to talk about. And again, I've said it so many times. I don't know why there's a hesitation from the current team to not really talk about the past. And I think the argument about the Atlanta and the organization, I think that's garbage. I don't understand that at all. I mean, we've talked about it before. The Cleveland Browns, they honor the team that was there before, Jim Brown and those guys. It's the city. It's the connection. It's the community.
It's like you said, the nostalgia factor where you think back about sitting at the game with your dad taking you or your mom taking you. And, you know, and you know, your formative years, you know, being spent for a lot of people watching the Jets or you know, attending games if they were so fortunate. And, you know, it certainly is, you know, it certainly tugs on the emotional heartstrings of people. That's why sports are as popular as they are. It's a combination of civic pride and nostalgia, you know, sitting around, you know, with your family and everything else. I mean, that's, you know, it's not, I mean, the players, nobody's got a real bond to most of the players. Timu probably would be the exception.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few of them, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, not very many for the most part. It's just family and you know, and good times from your youth.
Yeah, exactly.
Agreed. I mean, it's, you look back at some of these series, just reading through this article by Tim and Tim Campbell of the Free Press, we'll tweet it out. It's the amount of heartbreaking defeats that this team suffered.
They did, I know.
After being up 3-1. I mean, and we talked about with George Johnson earlier in the show, talking about Jamie McCowan and his cross check to Dale Hawerchuk, you know, which the Jets won that first round series against
the
Flames.
They didn't have Hawerchuk to play against the Oilers.
They didn't have Hawerchuk to play against the Oilers, and they lost 4-0. I mean, that was the, you know, the Jets were a fabulous team. The Jets were, you know, probably, you know, the second best team, third best team in the league that year, just behind the Oilers.
I think it was the late 80s that the Jets really had the best chance, Richie, to go further and possibly win a Stanley Cup. You're talking about Dale Hawerchuk, as you mentioned, Thomas Steen, Paul McLean, that group. That was really, and you mentioned 87, especially when the only time they got to the second round. That was really the best team. And in the early 90s, they had the makings of a good team, and obviously they had to trade Solani, and they didn't have him in the last year. But even that last year, I mean, it was a really good team, and Nikolai Habibulin was really emerging into an excellent goaltender and ended up winning a Stanley Cup in 2004.
Well, I remember the Game 5 in Detroit. You know, the emotion that just, you know, Habibulin made, you know, stood on his head and he made, was it 60 saves to win that, to win game
five
in Detroit?
It was like 55 or something. I remember watching that game and you thought that they had played their final game.
Well, because they lost game 4-6-1 at home, and everyone thought, okay, Detroit's going to go home and take care of business in game 5. And Habibulin was incredible.
Didn't Detroit win like 60 games in regulation that year?
Yeah, it was something crazy. Didn't Zhamnov score the only goal in that game?
I don't know. It's possible.
Peanut butter and Zhamnov.
Peanut butter and Zhamnov. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in the Jets head coach from April 28th, 1996. Terry Simpson is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Terry Simpson. Terry was the Jets head coach the last time a playoff game was played in Winnipeg back in 1996. Terry, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. My pleasure.
Terry, obviously wanted to, we've sort of been taking a walk down memory lane here as we look back at the previous performances and previous playoff series here that occurred in Winnipeg. Wanted to talk to you about that 1996 series. You know, what do you remember most about that series against the Detroit Red Wings, culminating with that loss in Game 6 on April 28th, 1996?
Well, I remember, of course, Detroit was just starting to become a powerhouse at that time, and they had a real good club, a really good club, and but we actually competed very well in the series. So we got great goaltending from Habby Boulin, and our team played real hard, and we gave them a run, but in the end, of course, they were the better team, but it was exciting. I mean, I can imagine how the city is feeling there now, just based on what happened in 1996. It was an exciting time.
Terry, we've been talking about this. We talked about this last segment. We've been talking about this quite a bit today. You know, the return of the whiteout. True North announced that, you know, they will be promoting the whiteout, and Jets fans are going to be wearing their white. And obviously, you're very familiar with the whiteout. If you could describe the whiteout to someone who has never experienced it, how would you describe it?
Well, it really takes you back when you walk out of the dressing room and you see. Because when you walk out at that time, everybody's in the stands, and it's an amazing sight, I guess, and the emotions are so high that it's bound to have a positive effect on your team. I mean, there's no question about that.
You know, when you think back to 1996, Terry, you eventually went over to coach for the Maple Leafs after leaving Winnipeg. Did you think that hockey would ever return to the city in NHL form?
Well, you know, I don't know about that. I was really disappointed when it left there because, you know, Winnipeg's a great hockey town. I always had everybody, I think, around connected with hockey at that time felt that it was a deep sense of disappointment that the team had to leave because it is a hockey town. And I think, obviously, it's proven that since the return of the Jets, but probably reproven it, I guess, but I wasn't sure, I guess, because of the finances and everything involved with that, but I did know that it was a great hockey town, and of course, if you look back, you know, there was a few teams that Canadian teams that at that time seemed like they were in jeopardy of moving to the States, but it seems to have made a big swing back now, and of course, in Canada, it's our game.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Terry Simpson. Terry was the last head coach to coach an NHL playoff game here in Winnipeg back in 1996. Now, Terry, that Winnipeg Jets team, the 95-96 season, it was sort of the quote-unquote lame duck season. Yet you were able to propel this team into the playoffs, much to the surprise of many observers. Mm-hmm. You know, did you use that, you know, how did you sort of handle the impending move of the team throughout the course of the season when you're coaching the players up in the dressing room?
Well, you know, the way it went during that year, it was on again, off again, on again, off again type of a scenario because there was different factors coming in. They were going to stay, then they were going to leave. It seems as though the players have an ability to wipe that out of their mind, and we never really talked about it much in the dressing room. I don't recall. I think the player, I mean, everybody knew it because it's in the media every day and stuff, but it didn't seem to affect our play on the ice. I wouldn't say it was a non-factor, but it didn't hurt us, I don't think. I think the players, they just play hockey, and of course, they all knew that wherever the team went, they would have a job, and so I guess they weren't really that concerned, probably.
Terry, as a former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, how much have you been following the team this year and the last 4 years, and how did you feel when the Winnipeg Jets clinched a playoff spot?
Well, you know, actually, to be honest about it, I don't follow real close, but I have watched the Jets in the last number of games now, and when they're in the stretch and stuff, and they, you know, I'll tell you what, they're a good hockey team. I mean, they've got they're big up front and they're fast, and you know, their defense is good. Their goaltending's been exceptional. They're very well coached, well grounded team. They're going to be a tough out in the playoffs, I believe. And they, you know, when Bufflin got the suspension, it seemed to weld the team closer together. And I mean, those last games were fantastic.
Yeah, Terry, we were talking about what ifs, and you were the coach of that team in '96. Do you ever think? I mean, probably it's long past now, but do you ever think at that time, like, how your team would have fared in the playoffs had you had Teemu Selanne on that crew?
Well, yeah, obviously it did, because that was a tough trade for a coach, as you can imagine. I mean, I think Teemu had played something like 50 games for us and had 70 points already, and before the trade, and we, you know, we got Kilgour and Trevor Dosky back, and they're young players, but of course Teemu was performing at the elite level, and you know, just to back up a little bit, you know, we played our last game of the season in Anaheim, mm-hmm. and if we'd have won that game, we would have been in fourth place, and we would have come home to play Toronto, because Toronto was in fifth mm-hmm. at that time, and we would have had a home. We would have started at home against Toronto. We lost the game. Consequently, we got in the plane the next day and flew to Detroit. So it was quite a swing there. And possibly, if we'd had Selanne in the lineup, first of all, we probably would have won the game, and I might have changed the whole concept of everything. But the playoff with Detroit, as I recall it, I mean, we weren't given much of a chance to win. But I think we were more competitive than a lot of people thought we were going to be. And you know, possibly with Teemu in the lineup, it might have helped. I mean, you know, obviously he's an ultimate elite goal scorer.
Absolutely. Yeah, Terry, that's interesting to hear your perspective on that. Were there any players that, if you recall, any players in April of 96 that maybe took the move and the loss harder than others?
Well, it was a tough day when the next day. I mean, it was tough on all the players. You know, I don't really recall. I know that, like, you know, Winnipeg is a great hockey city, as I've said before, but and one of the things that kind of struck me about Winnipeg when I was there is that sometimes the players didn't seem to be all that happy to come to Winnipeg or be traded to Winnipeg, but they didn't want to leave after they'd been there for a while. And so I think, consequently, I don't think any of the players really wanted to leave, but I don't recall any, you know, any one player being more emotional than the other player. I think all of them felt a huge emotion that day.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Terry Simpson. Terry was the Winnipeg Jets head coach in 1996 when there was last NHL playoff hockey here in Winnipeg.
Terry's also in the SJHL Hall of Fame and used to coach the Prince Albert Raiders.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Terry, you know, you mentioned that maybe the first choice for some players wasn't Winnipeg, and they, maybe they get traded to Winnipeg and, you know, they say, oh no, we're going to the coldest place on earth. But is that one of the greatest, one of the best things to come out of the return of the playoffs to the city of Winnipeg and the whiteout, the fact that players are going to see, you know, how crazy the fans are and that this team is finally starting to have some success coming over from Atlanta to Winnipeg?
Well, yeah, probably. Although I don't know if they necessarily had to get into the playoffs to substantiate that. I think, you know, the word I think is really around now, of course. But back when in our day, it was a little bit different. It seemed to me, anyway. But you know, a lot of the players. Well, hockey players are hockey players. They like to play hockey, and I think a lot of them appreciate playing in the Canadian cities, because all the city becomes involved with the team, and in one way, I mean, the city sort of holds the players a bit more accountable. They can't really get lost in the city and things like that. So, but I think the players thrive on the attention that the city gives them, and I think, you know, of course, I think that's true for all the Canadian cities.
Now, Terry, looking back at it, it appears, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you coach actually Dave Manson in junior. You then coached him with the Winnipeg Jets. You coached Prince Albert. Now Dave Manson is coaching in Prince Albert. Is that all correct?
Yeah, it's all correct. He was, of course, with in 1996, he was one of our top defensemen, Teppo and David, and where we didn't have a lot of experience on defense. They were our two most experienced guys, and then we picked up Craig Muni later on in the playoff playoff run. But like, we had guys like Darren Quint and Trevor Dosky and Malgunas and Finley, and those guys were all fairly inexperienced in terms of the NHL. So Manson and Teppo were our two go-to guys, so to speak, in that 1996.
In 96, the team was led in goals and really led offensively by Keith Tkachuk. Mm-hmm. I mean, Timo was having a fantastic year before he was traded. You know, Tkachuk, 50 goals. I remember he got that 50th goal against the LA Kings, right, the last home game of the season. Do you think he was that season, and he as a player being American and sort of being the big money player and signing that offer sheet, I believe it was with Chicago. Yeah. You know, was he underappreciated by the Jets fans back in 96?
Quite possibly, yeah, because that was the year where he didn't come to training camp, if you recall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're in a city that adopts a team like that, they may take it as a bit of a personal affront to start with. But of course, once we got going, I think it the tension eased somewhat. Keith was a great player at that time. He was just coming into his own, and obviously led our, along with Zhamnov, they led our offense. And you know, Eddie Olchuk was with us at that time, and Shane Doan was his first year in the league. So, you know, we had some good players. But we had a lot of, in our lineup, we also had, you know, guys, a lot of, I don't know what you'd call them, scrappy sort of guys like Dallas Drake and Randy Gillen and Chris King and Darren Shannon, guys like that, Igor Korolev now. So we had a decent up front team.
Terry Simpson was the Winnipeg Jets head coach when they last played a playoff game in April 28th, 1996. Terry, really appreciate your time this morning, and thanks for the walk down memory lane with us.
Thanks. It's my pleasure. Good luck to the Jets.
Thanks very much, Terry.
Yep, bye now.
Bye-bye. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Terry Simpson. Great interview, walking down the memory lane of 1996. It'll be available for you post-show on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca.
Richie, did we end up getting tickets? Because our buddy Neil Rockman was trying to get tickets to AC/DC. Did we get tickets?
We're shut out, and according to my brother, watching our buddy Neil not get tickets might be more interesting than actually going to see the show.
Is it sold out?
I assume so.
Really?
I think so.
Wow, that's quick.
Well, I know the floor, the field is sold out.
So Rocky says he's going to get us tickets, and they're for four of us, Richie and Richie's brother Adam, as he's affectionately known, AP. And, you know, at 2 in the afternoon, he's texting us, can you guys try to get tickets? I can't get in. Well, if you can't get in, how are we going to get
that's
in?
That's right.
And you were organizing it, right? So hopefully we can get some tickets to this. I love AC/DC. I think we all do.
I don't think Drew's a big
I'm relatively indifferent about them. I mean, I don't care one way or the other.
It's a great show. They're one of the best concerts.
Well, Drew, you like music from your youth, so whatever was popular in the 1930s.
Gene Pitney, a lot of big band stuff.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
He's an inspiration of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, things of that nature. That's, you know, when the movies were silent and they actually had somebody with piano accompaniment. You know, a lot of Charlie Chaplin's silent movie era. That's good stuff.
Hey, do you remember when we were on Kick, Red River, of course, the college station, and someone called in and asked, how old actually is Drew? And Drew's like, I'm only a year older than Ezra.
I thought that was on this station.
That might have been.
Might have been on both.
It might have happened more than once. You guys make me out to be quite old on more than one occasion, that's for sure. Let's look at the Eastern Conference playoff race and everything that's still to be decided in the Western Conference. Well, let's start with the East, because that's where there's still some teams we're not sure who are going to make the playoffs.
Is Pittsburgh ever going to win a game again?
Yeah. Well, the irony for Pittsburgh today, Pittsburgh's going into Buffalo. If they were to lose and if Boston was to win, the Pittsburgh Penguins would be out of the playoffs. But Pittsburgh goes into Buffalo today. Buffalo last night clinches 30th, so they're the worst team in the league. They have the best odds for Connor McDavid. The worst case scenario is they get Jack Eichel. And can't you foresee a situation where Buffalo goes in and beats Pittsburgh today when they have nothing to play for?
No, I don't see that happening. Well, it could happen because in a one-game situation, and the Buffalo Sabres, even though they're the worst team in the NHL, one game, I mean, maybe they go out there and they keep it. They're going to have to keep it low scoring. But talk about last night and the Pittsburgh Penguins losing to an Islanders team. And we talked about this on the Wednesday midweek show. The Islanders team hasn't been playing well as of late. They had won 3 of their last 10 games. So for them, you know, they're in 5th place now in the Eastern Conference, Drew. But the Pittsburgh Penguins needed that game. Like, they needed it so that this last game didn't matter. And there's still a chance. As you mentioned, the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Buffalo Sabres and all is good. But this Pittsburgh Penguins team, talk about limping into the playoffs. They've won 3 of their last 10. And they can't score any goals. It's unbelievable. I haven't seen anything like this out of this team since Sidney Crosby has come over there. They cannot score goals.
They're a mess right now. I think that probably goes a lot higher than just on the ice.
I probably would agree.
Yeah. I mean, again, I said it before. I said earlier in the season I didn't think they were that good when they came through town. They should be making the playoffs. That good meaning like upper echelon of the league. And I've said here also that I still wouldn't want to play them only because you never know what happens with Crosby and Malkin if both of them were to just get going and you have two lines and be difficult to defend. But with that defense and the other questions, I wouldn't be. You always have concern if you play against Crosby and Malkin, but I wouldn't be overly concerned with the rest of the roster.
Yeah, on the flip side, Richie, you don't want to play them because they have two of the best players in the league, but you kind of do want to play them because they're so vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
So if it's the Tampa, it's probably the Rangers, actually, right, at this point?
Right now, if the playoffs started today, it'd be Rangers-Pittsburgh first round. And remember, Pittsburgh was up 3-1 on the Rangers last year before the Rangers came back. Montreal-Ottawa, which would be a fun battle. And remember, Ottawa handled Montreal, was it 2-3 years ago when the size was too much for Montreal to handle. Ottawa's a different team now. It's still a size advantage over Montreal, but different obviously the passing of the guard there with changing the guard with Jason Spezza and different guys who've left. And then you have Washington, the Islanders, Tampa Bay, and Detroit. Now it's possible Ottawa has played so well and they win today that Ottawa ends up playing Tampa Bay.
Sure.
They could jump over Detroit, which you wouldn't want to do.
Expansion.
You'd rather play Montreal.
You'd rather, I agree with you there. And Pittsburgh, of course, if they were to win and Ottawa was to lose, Pittsburgh would leapfrog Ottawa. Ottawa would end up in second in the wild card position there in the Eastern Conference.
They played in New York.
Then they would play in New York, yeah. New York is locked into the number one seed.
The Rangers.
The Rangers, yeah. The Rangers are locked into the number one seed. The Capitals and the Islanders are going to play each other. They're still battling for home ice advantage, though.
I shouldn't say, because Tampa also can pass Montreal if Montreal loses and Tampa wins.
That's true, Tampa. But the Rangers are locked into number one. Washington and the Islanders are locked into playing each other.
Yes.
And other than that, it's sort of wild and woolly there in the Eastern Conference.
So Washington and the Islanders and Calgary, Vancouver have the same situation. We know they're going to play each other in the first round. We just don't know where the first game is going to be.
That's right. They're still battling out for home ice advantage, and I mean a lot of emotion. The Islanders were one of the best teams in the league, for a long part of the season. A lot of struggles recently. They give up that bad goal, Yaroslav Halak, against the Flyers a couple nights ago. They beat Pittsburgh on home ice yesterday.
That win was huge for them.
Huge win for them. Huge confidence boost for them. Now the Islanders, again, become one of those teams maybe you don't want to play in the first round as well, given the emotion, talking about 1996 and the Jets leaving. Islanders leaving Uniondale, leaving the Nassau County Coliseum after the end of this year, heading to Brooklyn. A lot of emotion there, because people don't really. If you live in Long Island, you're unlikely to go to Brooklyn for those games. And people think, what's the big deal? There's going to be a lot of fans who I think give up on their. That don't necessarily follow the Islanders 41 games a year to Brooklyn to attend.
I'd agree with that.
Right. And, back to the Pittsburgh Penguins. To me, if the Pittsburgh Penguins miss the playoffs, that's a bigger disappointment than the LA Kings missing the playoffs. And this is why. The LA Kings have won the Stanley Cup twice in the last 4 years, and they've played so much hockey. When you're talking about guys like Drew Doughty and Jeff Carter and Jonathan Quick, they played in the Olympics last year. To me, Rich, it's more of a disappointment because how poor the Eastern Conference is. The LA Kings are in the stronger conference, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, they were in...
Another reason,
yeah, but the Eastern Conference is a weaker conference, maybe not by as much, but... The Pittsburgh Penguins were in first place in the Eastern Conference in December. The LA Kings have been bad all year. The LA Kings weren't doing well all year. Pittsburgh Penguins have been a 500 team the last 50 games.
They've been a sub 500 team. I mean, they've been 20. I think they're 20-21-7 or something, or 20-22-6, something like that.
Rick said they're 29th in the league since March 1st or something.
I said that on Wednesday. You said it, yeah. Only Arizona's been worse than them since, I think, maybe it's March 1st or the 15th of March, something like that.
If Pittsburgh doesn't make the playoffs, I could see changes.
How does Mike Johnston keep his job?
In management, I could see changes in coaching, and I could see a significant change or two on the ice.
Well, they're going to be without Chris Letang for the rest of the season as well. That was announced.
Yeah, but we asked Mike Colligan about it on Wednesday's show. Is this a Malkin Crosby possibly want out? When you have regime changes, and I'm not saying there will be another one because there already kind of has been one, although it seems like an interim regime. When you have regime changes, it generally provides players with an out to change things up. Whereas if you have, if somebody were to come to a general manager who's been in place for Ken Holland, well, and there's no, you want out, well, then obviously what's wrong with this player? Whereas if the GM's changing, the coach is changing, there's been a little turnover, and maybe you want out to start afresh, you have an easier ability to spin that to the media.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a Pittsburgh team that last time they sort of collapsed, there was a lot of talk that they'd want out and maybe they won't re-sign.
What do you mean by collapse? 4-0 loss to Boston in the third round? I mean, that's a collapse in context.
No, I would say collapse more so. I mean, I can't remember who
3-1 to the Rangers last year, up 3-1 to the Rangers. I mean, they could have won that series in the second round, Drew.
Maybe it was 2 years ago that there was the matchup.
Philadelphia. In the first round.
When, they thought, and then, is this guy potentially going to be traded in the offseason? And instead, they re-signed everybody to the long-term deals. Maybe it was the year that Letang was coming up or something. I don't know if he was RFA status back then or if he had a year left and they signed him to an extension. Whatever it was, I don't remember. But this Penguins team, I mean, you're going on how many years now where you think you're a cup contender, and nothing good happens?
If they lose that game tonight against Buffalo, then... That would just be it would be heartbreaking for Penguins fans, and it would be really hard to believe that the worst team in the league is knocking off the former Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. I realize that was 5 years ago now, but it would be a shock to me. I didn't see this coming at all from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Three of their last five games, they've only scored one goal. It's not Crosby and Malkin. I mean, it's the supporting cast. They haven't surrounded those guys. They've built their teams, rightly so, around those two centers.
Yeah,
But
I think it is them a bit, Ezzy. I mean,
Crosby leads the league in points. It's his fault?
Yeah, but he leads with 83 points or 84 points.
He's still leading the league.
Don't get me wrong.
It's not like he's having a bad season.
He's not having a bad season, but he's not having a great season.
Nobody has more points than him. Who's having a better season than him?
I think he's that much better than the next guys he's competing with. I love John Tavares, and I love Jamie Benn, but Crosby's still the most talented player in the league.
Right, I'm just saying, you can't...
What do you have, 100 and how many points last year?
Hang on, I will look that up right away.
No, he had 104, but he had a better season last year. I'm just saying, it's not his fault. It's the makeup of the team, the defense. I mean, injuries have obviously been a huge problem. There's something else going on there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. At some point, the big dog's got to just say, okay, we want to make the playoffs. We're going to score a couple goals tonight.
Well, I mean, you look back to that game in Ottawa, Crosby was a dominant player. I mean, the best players for the Penguins supposedly in that game against Ottawa were Crosby and Marc-Andre Fleury.
And he's saying, I heard Crosby, and don't get me wrong, I'm as big of a Sidney Crosby believer as anybody, but, Crosby said last night they're not getting the bounces, sure, and they're not. I mean, he had a great chance last night against the Halak, but it doesn't matter. There's no more excuses. You can't lose this. I mean, you conceivably can lose, and Boston can still lose, but you can't lose to Buffalo in terms of, you're playing against just an awful team. Now, Marty Baron mentioned earlier in the show, a Buffalo team that the fans will now be hoping for them, because now that they've clinched for McDavid, or at least the best odds for McDavid, they actually want them to win.
Sure. I mean, it's bizarre to say, but to some extent, it's a bad matchup for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, no. Well, it's worse than maybe it was 3 days ago. It's still the easiest team in the league. Yeah. I mean, this Sabres team, I know. Like the worst team ever.
Let me put it to you this way. If at the at 9 o'clock tonight.
Have you seen their defense? Yes, I'm going to read you their defense right now.
Okay.
I want to read you the Buffalo Sabres because this costs NHL dollars to go to these games. Andre Mezeros, and Rasmus Ristolainen. Ristolainen's a talented player. Mezeros is not a top six NHL defenseman anymore. Zach Bogosian. Have you heard of him? And Tyson Strachan, not an NHL defenseman. Tyson Strachan, in my opinion. Chad Ruotel. I've never heard of him. Never seen a play, don't know. And then Nikita Zadorov. Zadorov and Ristolainen are talented players.
We have 2 19-year-olds there.
Yeah, the 2 19-year-old guys. And you have Bogosian. And you have basically, I don't know anything about Chad Ruotel. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong.
I'm going to look.
You have three NHL defensemen on that back end. Okay? So every time a Buffalo Sabres pairing comes out, I haven't read you the rest of their roster, and you wouldn't know any of their names. Anytime one of their pairings comes out, you probably have a non-NHL defenseman, top NHL defenseman on the team. So Crosby or Malkin can work on whoever they want to work on. It should be a 5-0 win.
How shocked would you be if Buffalo beat them?
Not as shocked as I probably should be.
Yeah. And that, I think, speaks to the problems there in Buffalo.
The third-line center for the Buffalo Sabres right now is Phil Verone. Do you know who Phil Verone is?
Isn't he in our fantasy hockey draft or something? Isn't that one of the guys in our draft? I don't know who Phil Verone is.
And Ted Nolan's will be his last game.
Yeah.
He's going to be fired. So maybe, I don't know if the players love him or don't love him.
Hey, guys,
I can't see them.
Guys, this is the Stanley Cup for the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
I mean, anyways, I wouldn't be shocked if at 9 o'clock tonight the Pittsburgh Penguins lost. Then again, I wouldn't be shocked if Boston Bruins lost to Tampa Bay and the Penguins can go in through the back door. In any event, we'll find out later on. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Nice little email from our friend Rack Carney, who, of course, radio legend Rack Carney. He informs us that yesterday, April 10th, 2015, was the 30th anniversary of the first time Jets fans wore white, as in the first time the whiteout took effect.
So you were in your 20s back then?
Not even touching that one, Ezzy.
The slogan was good guys wear white.
Good guys wear white, exactly. That was the slogan back in the day, 30 years ago yesterday.
We had a call on the postgame show on Thursday that mentioned the good guys wear white.
Yeah,
I didn't know that's actually how it originated.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was the slogan either. But
that's why Drew's wearing blue right now.
Yeah, exactly. I have some of the pom poms though.
I have the pom poms too.
Are you going to give out the pom poms for game one of the? I don't think today's going to be a whiteout. By the way,
Another person there, Les Reichus, texted and said, do you guys think there will be a whiteout today? I think there will be a smattering, probably a pretty good smattering of people wearing white.
It's not going to be a full out whiteout.
No, I don't think it's going to be a full whiteout today. I'd be surprised, but I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of white in the stands.
You know it's going to be a whiteout, game three of the first round, because you have to wear white. So if you're going to that game, if you're listening out there and you've never been to a whiteout, make sure you don't necessarily have to wear like white pants, but make sure that at the very least you're wearing a white shirt, because you don't want to be that, when they pan the crowd,
white
everybody's
pants.
Wearing white.
Yeah. You don't want to be that one guy.
You don't want to be that one guy that's wearing like pink or blue because, there's 15,000 fans there.
Yeah.
Make sure you're at the very least wearing a white jersey or a white t-shirt. Or white sweater vest, whatever.
And the only thing, aside from, I assume, Ryan Reeves' family and maybe a couple, maybe you get some Getzlaff family members from, around the area, it's not like Chicago or you're not going to have any fans of St. Louis or Anaheim.
You're
going to
stick out like a sore thumb. Like, you're going to be that,
Well, I remember back in 96, you'd go to you'd be at game three, I guess, and you could pinpoint the person who's wearing not white in the crowd, from a mile away. It's like, did that guy not get the memo or, how did that work out that you're not wearing white? Did you wake up late and you just threw on what was ever next to your bed, Ezzy?
I mean, they could have been a nonconformist.
Yeah, they might have been a nonconformist. That's true. It's exciting. I mean, it is exciting for the people in Winnipeg that we talked about.
Drew, you're not going to wear the ribbon? Are you not going to wear the ribbon?
It's the Seinfeld conversation. I mean, I remember that game three. I think I wore a white onesie long underwear outfit or something.
Wow. That's okay. Turn off the radio.
Nobody wants to visualize
it's
that.
It's over.
Yeah. I also think put some sort of white hair dye or something in my hair to, paint my face white.
I was on Fox that day.
Like as a broadcaster?
No, not as a broadcaster.
Or on an actual Fox.
I wrote on the
actual
Fox.
You wrote a Fox to the arena.
No, on Fox, because it was an afternoon game, if you recall, game three, and it was on Fox National. And I was on Fox National TV with my buddy Stevie Weir.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. It's going to be a wild atmosphere. I mean, you're going to have the whiteout, and the shout-out is going to happen after the anthem ends. People aren't going to be sitting down. It's just going to be, the energy and the atmosphere in that building is just going to be absolutely electric. You think the building's loud now, when they...
I know. No, it's never comparable. I mean, you never have the regular season. I think the biggest thing will be the upper deck always seems to be loud. It's going to be the lower bowl that's not as loud that I think will match or try to match that upper deck enthusiasm.
Sure, I think so. Certainly for game three when that's back here, the first time that we get a playoff game again, it's just going to be absolutely electric here at MTS Center.
The best part about the playoffs also, and I always found the whiteouts of the original team, was that after a goal was scored against the team, it would take 5 to 6 seconds before the fans would get back into it, the Go Jets go.
That's right. That's it. There's a little and then boom immediately. Yeah.
It wouldn't last.
It's our duty to pick it back up and go, get back with the Go Jets go chant immediately.
I mentioned this with Rick on Thursday. The Go Jets go chant, my last home game was game three, which we're talking about, 96. The Go Jets go chant started during warm-up.
Oh, man.
It was crazy.
Everyone was there. I mean, it's going, people showed up. There's a good attendance for warm-up. But, I mean, I remember hearing after game three that in the pregame meeting in the dressing room, the players could barely hear themselves because the chant, it was just reverberating into the dressing room so loud. And it was just such a wild atmosphere and everything else. And, I mean, that these guys are waiting for that. They've heard... for the last 4 years, yes. They've heard nothing but about, what the playoff atmosphere in Winnipeg would be like, when they make it. So, you saw Blake Wheeler, his comments about it's a good thing I got a tinted visor because, it's going to be completely white in the building.
By the way, on the tinted visor.
Yes, Richard, you do get credit. Go ahead.
I think it was after the Toronto game, a red round there, because I think he missed, did he miss a game or two? Anyhow, he got hit pretty hard in that game. And, I made a point to you guys. I was like, I feel like Blake Wheeler's put on a tinted visor. I didn't think he had one before. I don't think he had one before. And I got all the gears from the guys. Nah, it's not a tinted visor. What are you talking about? It's a regular visor. And I kept saying it's tinted. Apparently now it's been confirmed.
Phil Fleury used to wear a tinted visor.
Yeah, Ovechkin.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's, I guess the glare or something else along those lines. I mean, he's not wearing, he's not wearing a visor at all anymore. He's wearing, a tinted gauge or whatever it is, given that with the eating the puck in Edmonton a number of weeks ago. But, I mean, look, it's going to be a great atmosphere today. People are asking us, should we wear white? If you want to wear white, wear white.
It might be, I mean, based on some of the texts and the messages you get, you might have more white, might have all white.
Like you're saying, it might be.
I mean, I guess. Let's think about it this way, Drew.
Okay.
And Ezzy, you're here, right, Ez? if you're going to the game today,
yeah.
If you're getting dressed,
if you're someone's dressing,
everybody always has a white.
Someone's dressing.
Everybody always has a white shirt, in the drawer. Why wouldn't you wear that?
Sure.
And if you're gonna have you don't want to be that guy, as you mentioned, wearing the blue or the or the red.
I think it's not expected that there's going to be a whiteout. Like,
but yet, if you're that person, why wouldn't you wear white?
Yeah, you're given the lineups we've seen, and our friends at Royal Sports reporting, given the madhouse that's been everywhere in terms of merchandise, a lot of people already have their white gear. So if you have it in your hands, might as well put it on. To your point there, Richard, go ahead. I mean, saying is it officially a whiteout? Well, I mean, I don't know how you officially declare something a whiteout or not officially declare something a whiteout.
Yeah, it's like the team says. Well, it's wear white, kind of. A
yeah, and it's also
declaration.
There's also a movement among fans, as I'm pretty tuned in with. Usually, the fans tweet in what they're doing, and there hasn't been really kind of a movement to have a whiteout. But regardless, I mean, it doesn't matter. Today's atmosphere at the MTS Center is going to be a very, very exciting, and everyone's going to be happy because the Jets are in. So the Jets might not have much to play for, but it's going to be a great atmosphere. Calgary still has. has home ice advantage to play for. So it's going to be good times regardless.
It's going to be kind of, I would say, be akin to the first game back in the sense that the game means absolutely nothing. It's an exhibition game, but the crowd will be so amped up that it'll make it more interesting than it would be in usual case.
Yeah. The game on the ice, by the way, is probably going to be awful.
That's what I mean. But I'm saying, like, the exhibition game, the first game back.
Yeah.
Before that official Montreal game against Columbus, you had, like, the fans were so excited. So they made the game more interesting because they were so into it. But the game itself on the ice wasn't anything to write home about.
No, and it's quite likely it's, you know, it is bobblehead day. It's Blake Wheeler bobblehead day.
Oh, bobblehead
so,
day.
Yeah, so you are looking at likely probably the fourth straight game where the Jets, the person whose bobblehead is being handed out, is not going to get a point, because I'd be surprised if Blake Wheeler was in the lineup today for the Winnipeg Jets.
That's fair.
So, you know, it's going to be another one of those, but that's okay. If the reason he's not getting points is because he's not playing because they've clinched a playoff spot, I think most Jets fans will gladly accept that as a legitimate reason for struggles. Game time, 2 p.m. It's available here on TSN 1290, also TSN 3, where you can enjoy the dulcet tones of Dennis Bayak on the television call. Head to break. One final segment. When we come back, it'll be called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. A reminder, a programming note, if you will. Tuesday night, special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the playoff preview show. Tuesday night, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., the first hour entirely about the Winnipeg Jets and their preview against their first-round opponent, either the Blues or the Ducks. Hours 2 and 3 will go around the NHL and get you set for the 2015 playoff matchups, Tuesday night, 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Richard, Ezra, last year there was one sweep in the first round of the playoffs, the Montreal Canadiens over the Tampa Bay Lightning, 4-0. Will we see a sweep this year in the first round or any round?
Well, any round's a tough question. I don't know. I don't think you'll see one in the first round. I can say that. No. I don't think you'll see one in the first round. I think it'd be more likely in the later rounds, actually, than it would be in the first round. These teams are so close. I mean, maybe Pittsburgh gets in. They are in New York. That would be the one series that I would think would be a possibility of a sweep. But otherwise, I don't see it.
I don't think we see a sweep at all this year. I think it's so close, and we have the defending Stanley Cup champs out. We might have the Pittsburgh Penguins out. Boston Bruins might be out. So I'm going to say no. I think all the series go 5 games or more.
Last year, Anze
you seem to not like that answer. You kind of just.
I think there's going to be a lot of waves today. Thinking
waves in
the
crowd.
The game, yeah.
No, like Pete, like fans of Drew's waving to him as he goes in the MTS Center.
That's right. Yeah, have to, you know, shake hands, kiss babies, that whole sort of thing. Last year, Anze Kopitar led all players in playoff scoring with 26 points. Over under the top scorer in the playoffs this year having 25.5 points.
Well, I think that is really dependent on which team makes it, right? Like, if it's the St. Louis Blues, I think they spread out the scoring enough that they're not going to happen. If it's, say, the Blackhawks or the Ducks, then I think Getzlaff or Taves, though, they would have more than that. So I'm going to go over.
I'm going to go over, too, Rich. And I think, you know, we were talking about Crosby's going to get the scoring title, or Tavares gets the scoring title in the mid-80s, or kind of 86 whatever points. So you'd think, based on that there's going to be less points than that. But I think because of that and the lack of scoring in the regular season, I think we're going to see more of that in the playoffs. So I'm going to go over. I think it'll be just under 30.
Assuming the Ottawa Senators take care of business this afternoon in Philadelphia, there will be as many as 5 Canadian teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Which Canadian team has the best shot at going all the way?
And I've thought about this. That's a tough question, Drew. And I think it's tough because, I mean, the Habs with Carey Price and have been cemented in the playoffs for some time, but there are some flaws in the Habs. There's no doubt about it. You look at Vancouver and Calgary and Ottawa, I think the Jets are actually better than all 3 of those teams. So I would actually say Montreal would be first and the Jets would be second in terms of making a run.
I'm going to go with the Winnipeg Jets. I think the Montreal Canadiens obviously have the best goalie in the world, and they have more talent on defense with PK Subban maybe leading the charge. Not by that much, but they're, I think, a little bit too small up front. And I think I'm going to go with the Jets because of the fact that they've been playing so well as a team, and they've improved their game so much defensively. Pavlik has been incredible, and I think you've got enough talent up front there with Blake Wheeler leading the charge that I think they're going to upset some teams.
Last year, an NHL record was broken for the most multi-goal comebacks by all teams in the opening round with 10. The year before that, there were 8 multi-goal comebacks all playoffs long. Will there be over or under 9.5 multi-goal comebacks in all rounds combined during the playoffs this year?
I thought last year was just so spectacular, and that culminated in that LA-Chicago series. I'm going to go under.
Yeah, it's tough to go over, especially in the first round. Last year was ridiculous with all of those comebacks. I think, well...
NHL hasn't exactly been providing the most exciting hockey this year. I hope it's going to be over, but I don't expect it to be.
Last year, for just the 4th time in NHL history, a team came back down 3-0 in a series. Will we see a team come back down 3 games this year? Conversely, will there be a team that has a 3-0 lead this year?
Well, I don't think there'll be a 3-0, and 3-0 comebacks don't happen very often. You have to be able to choke as well as the San Jose Sharks choked.
Yeah,
you have to be that good at choking.
Hang on, let me just interrupt you for a second. How good is, the Sharks made this sort of late run, a mini run, which wasn't really a run, but then the reason they were officially kicked out of the playoffs is when they lost to the Arizona Coyotes. Isn't that just the San Jose Sharks in a nutshell
classic,
right there?
Classic. I don't think you'll see 3-0 comeback. You might see a 3-0 lead. I don't see, a lot of times you'll get a game or two back, but... no, guys, and that LA comeback was one of a few for the ages. There aren't many of them.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a team come back 3-0 just because it's happened so few times in history. I wouldn't be surprised if a team comes back 3-1, though.
Last year, the Kings, the Los Angeles Kings, became the first team to ever reach the Stanley Cup Finals after having played 3 consecutive 7-game series. Will we see a team do that this year?
Really tough to say again, Richie, but I think there's more of a chance that happens because of how open the field is as opposed to a team coming down 3-0, because I think there's going to be a lot of 7-game series. So I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be shocked.
You have to have great depth to be able to do that.
Yep.
So I don't know if there's many teams with the depth that LA Kings had last year. Maybe St. Louis would be the only team I could see doing that.
Last year, 26 games went to overtime. Will we see over or under 25.5 playoff overtime games this year?
I'm going to go over on that because every team, so many close squads here, right? Every game, and there's going to be so many one-goal games, and I think it's going to go over.
I'm going to go over, too, and it's going to be incredible. The first round of the playoffs are awesome, and it seems to just get better and better and better, and I think sudden death overtime is the best thing in any sport.
Well, it's going to be especially nice that we won't be seeing the shootout at any point in time.
Yeah, thank God. I mean, we'll hopefully get rid of that for next year. At least make it a lot less, less influential. Yeah.
I thought that Jets Colorado shootout was fantastic. I love it. Love the shootout. If you haven't listened to the show, you know that I hate the shootout more than anyone.
Oh God! I mean, it's unbelievable that determines. And you look at LA's shootout record, right, guys? I mean, get on a tangent here, but LA's shootout record this year is what? 2-8. So. You get rid of the shootout, maybe that team's in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it's part of the deal. I realize that, but I'm just saying. It's not skills competition.
I agree with you there.
They didn't end the Yankees-Red Sox game last night with a home run competition in the 10th inning.
It's true. That Yankees-Red Sox game went 19 innings last night, and that's a long time for two.
You couldn't pay me to watch that game.
Well, I mean, we sat through, was it, 17 innings in Philadelphia last
year? Yeah, that was, we're in person, it's fun, but I mean, with bunch of other stuff going on, I'm not going to watch the Yankee Red Sox game.
Yeah,
this game didn't end with you getting hit by the home run winning ball, though.
That's right.
That's true, which is disappointing for everybody. Last year, the Los Angeles Kings won the Stanley Cup on June 13th as the season started earlier due to the Sochi Winter Olympics. Will the Stanley Cup be awarded before or after June 20th? It's a bit of a trick question as well.
I'm going to say after.
So is the Stanley Cup going to be awarded in July, Richie?
Well, what was it? The LA Rangers series, if it had gone 7 games, right? That's last, no, it was 2 years ago. The Devils LA series, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
right? Devils LA, if it had gone seven games, wouldn't it have finished like 3 days before the draft or 4 days before the draft?
Something like that.
I'm going to say before, but by not much. I think by June 17th or 18th, it'll be awarded.
Now, do you say June 17th there? Or do you know something?
No, I'm just pulling numbers out of a hat. I have no idea.
Okay, if you guys check the NHL media guide, the last possible day for the Stanley Cup final is June 17th.
Oh, so I'm wrong.
Yeah. It's a trick question. I thought Ezzy was playing a trick on you there.
There's no way Ezzy looked into that intensely.
I'd like to say that I did, but I didn't.
You set us up for that one, Drew.
I did. I mean, I thought Ezzy was setting you guys up. Maybe he was dreaming about the Stanley Cup final and he was hibernating.
I'm actually happy it's going to be mid-June and not any later. Well, I heard some people talking about, do we have to extend it to July?
No.
My God.
No. We don't have to extend any sort of hockey or ice-related game into July at any point in time. I'd say mid-June is quite late enough already. I'm fine with going into the hot stove season at that point in time.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you can talk about free agency and you can talk about the draft and you can talk about trades and you can
Which shouldn't even be that interesting this year because there's not many players who are any good up for free agency.
No, there's certainly not a great free agent crop at this point in time. Everybody that's any good, you know, would be re-signed already. You know, not like last year's crop was fantastic. I mean, who was the star of last year's crop? Paul Stastny?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so... Anyways, it's we can focus on the playoffs. We don't have to look ahead to the offseason just yet, fortunately for Winnipeg Jets fans. Quickly, before we go to cheers and jeers, anything more than, you know, anything you're looking forward to in terms of a playoff race more than anything else?
The Jets overall?
Yeah, just, you know, the idea of playoffs.
Well, I just think that I like the dynamics of a series and how the storylines play out and how you're going to have everybody in Winnipeg is going to, if you play Anaheim, everybody in Winnipeg will hate Ryan Getzlaff after game one. And Corey Perry more than Getzlaff, because Corey Perry is a real pain to play against. In St. Louis, you know kind of the guys you're going to hate, but if they play Anaheim, which I'm feeling that they will. Corey Perry will be enemy number one. He'll be booed every time he touches the puck. That kind of stuff is the stuff I look forward to.
What about on St. Louis, Backes and Oshie, the battles they had with Mark Stewart? It's going to be incredible. Yeah, Drew, for me, it's just the beginning of the playoffs, all eight series, because each series takes on a life of its own, and they're all exciting nowadays. So I'm just excited for the first round of the playoffs to really start, because the regular season to me has been dragging on a little bit here.
Well, it hasn't been a great regular season at all.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richie?
Jets fans get my cheer. Waited 16 years for this team to come back. Patiently waited for this team to come back and put down a lot of cash to see this team play some bad games over the past 3 years and stuck with them. Obviously, it's been 4 years here, but it's been a long time. And celebrated on Thursday and enjoyed it and get a cheer. It's great. Great to see the city so lively.
Is it?
Yeah, it's got to be a cheer for the city of Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba and Jets fans everywhere, ex-Winnipeggers or whoever is a fan of the Winnipeg Jets. It's just great to see, Drew. We all lived through the Jets leaving in 1996, and for this city to have a playoff game coming up here is just excellent. It's great for hockey fans and non-hockey fans alike. Just great for the city and the province.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our guests, Marty B. Ron. Big thanks to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. And big thanks to former Winnipeg Jets head coach, Terry Simpson. If you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, also on tsn1290.ca and on our website. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, Not Auto Corp, and Zappia Realty Group. Big thank you, or follow us on Twitter, rather, at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim and analyst Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A reminder, Tuesday, 6 p.m., special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And Hustler and Lawless are next.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.